Next, we're going to hear from John Saxon. John was the operations supervisor at Honeysuckle Creek at the tracking station here. He supported all the Apollo missions at the operations console. And John also spoke to John Young and Charlie Duke on the lunar surface. If he gets time, he might tell you about that. He wasn't supposed to, but he stepped in and had to fill in the gap. We'll hand over to John Saxon now.
What I'm preparing to do is to give you a flavour of the Honeysuckle Station. Yeah, well, this is telling everybody what they already knew, and that is that you need three stations around the Earth to give you some coverage of the Moon as soon as they're beyond geosynchronous orbit, actually a little bit below that. And equally so, these were the three stations. And here was Honeysuckle down there, Goldstone in the Mojave Desert, and Madrid, just up in the hills above Madrid, really. And it was opened by yet another Prime Minister, Harold Holt. Yes, Harold Holt visited the station after he had opened it officially with... Anyhow, that was in 17th of March 1967. The station itself was built mostly in 1966. I arrived there after spending some time in the Network Training Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, which I went to before I actually emigrated out to Australia. So I had to fly from England to Greenbelt to go for the training, which was called the Manned Space Flight Operations Supervisor Training or something similar. And then I had to fly back to England in order to emigrate down to Australia.
Picturesque natural surroundings and bearing an equally picturesque name, the Honeysuckle Creek Tracking Station. Dominated by its saucer-shaped radio antenna 85 feet in diameter, it's the sixth such station to be constructed in Australia and places this country second only to America as the Western world's most important space-tracking country. Prime Minister Holt performs the official opening ceremony. Built by the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration at a cost of $2 million, Honeysuckle Creek is operated by Australian firms employing homegrown scientists, engineers, and technicians. Honeysuckle Creek is virtually an earthbound ear to a man on the moon, being one of three stations destined to guide the Apollo project to a manned landing on our nearest space neighbor, scheduled for 1970. Together with the deep space tracking station at Tidbin Villa, 14 miles to the west, it'll play a vital role in the critical final stages of the moon landing. Mr. Holt sets the antenna in motion at the press of a button. Honeysuckle Creek, another step in man's most exciting journey, a quarter of a million miles into space.
This was sort of ground plan of rough site plan, antenna up on the hill, the operations building, and down below was the power generation building, had all the diesel generators, and also many little offices or workshops for electricians, air conditioning people, motor mechanics, huge number of people with skills in those sort of areas. The operations building, which was sort of 1.5 stories high, ground level, then up some stairs into the operations room up above. I should just mention that this was it says crew room, but actually it was a cafeteria, and right next, which was a 24/7 operation, and right next door to it was a couple of bedrooms, which were almost impossible to sleep in because of all the noise that came out of the cafeteria 24/7. Anyhow, occasionally you got a few hours. I did sleep on site quite a few times, or try to. And up here, we've got the main operations area. First of all, the Unified S-Band area, which is the same as the area at Tidman Villa, which is a control for the transmitters, receivers, pointing in the antenna, and tracking data originating and all the rest of it. Next door to it was the telemetry operation area. We had three decommutators for the spacecraft telemetry data. And the great thing about it was in manned space flight, you could actually see all the activity that was going on see all the temperatures, pressures, and many things like the astronaut respiration and heartbeat and stuff like that, which was probably the most important part. Computer area, quite a lot of stuff in the computer area. I'll show you in a minute. We had a hatch going through to the communications area so they could pass through teletype messages and this type of thing. And that was called the communications switch room, but it was really the wire room mostly, where all the intercoms, every physician had different sets of buttons on it, and they were all wired up in there. And really, what the operator is doing, he can drive the antenna to the acquisition point where we expect the spacecraft to appear. And then once it does appear, it's a sort of a dance between him and the receiver operators. When the receivers are locked up on the spacecraft, then he can select automatic track, and the antenna will then follow the spacecraft. Pretty cunning system, actually, because they had four feed horns pointing down the bore side of the antenna. And the whole idea of the servo system was to balance the output of those four feed horns so the antenna was always focused directly on the spacecraft. Controls for the power amplifiers, transmitters, and there was some chart recorders which were very handy at times to find out what actually happened. This was the ranging equipment. The ranging was interesting subsystem in that this guy was the only guy who really understood it. It was used a system of transmitting the pseudo-random number code. That was a random number code which repeated. So it was called a pseudo-random numbers. And when they were reflected back from the spacecraft, they were compared, and you could measure the spacecraft distance to an accuracy of, I think, 2 or 3 meters at lunar distance. Took that over a period of time, you got the velocity of the spacecraft, and so on and so on. Accelerations in all axes in the end. This was 1.5 decommutators in the telemetry area. It's a sort of simulation rack there, but that's one of the decommutators going down here. This is another one. Get all this stuff in one chip in your phone these days, I'm sure. Also, there was 3 of these in the telemetry area, plus TV equipment for when we got TV from the moon, plus recorders, analog tape recorders. This was the computer area. So there was a lot of gear there, and this was one of the main computers. We had 2 of those, one for telemetry and one for command data. Item in the middle was called the expanded memory unit. We also had paper tape drives, you name it, data tapes for driving the antenna along the expected track of the spacecraft, and another one for simulations and other purposes. One of these computers, I can tell you, was, I think, had a 2 microsecond cycle time, had something like 16K, or it might have been 32K of 30-bit memory, and lots of input-output channels. Did a lot of parallel computing going on in there, including handling the tape handlers and many other functions. This was the operations console. Now, I should say something about this because basically it was where Mike and I worked. I was lucky enough to do all the Apollo missions there, plus Skylab, plus various other bits and pieces from that console. I should say that around the manned spaceflight network, it was expected that all the equipment would be the same in all the stations, so that when they sent out instructions and all the rest of it, they would know how the stations were laid out and what the controls were and all the rest of it. This console, after Mike then finished with it, bore absolutely no resemblance to any other console in the manned spaceflight network. I think Mike purloined those beautiful analog meters from one of the tracking ships, which was being dismantled. We had various status lights showing what the equipment was doing around the station. We both had fairly big intercom panels they were different because on this side I was required, if necessary, to talk to the spacecraft and monitor the voice, amongst many other functions. And so, if necessary, I could press a button up there and talk to a spacecraft. But you didn't do it lightly. I never thought I was going to do it at all. It only happened on Apollo 16. On my right there, there's two panels of 25 buttons, push buttons. Computer address matrices, I think they were called. From there, I could control telemetry things like initiating playbacks and all this sort of stuff. And on the right, there was a command panel, which you could send commands to the spacecraft if the circuits to Houston failed or something of that sort, and high-speed printers and various other things. I think maybe the fun thing was this, which is, it seems almost inconceivable these days when you can generate things so easily digitally. But this was the configuration board, which consisted of magnetic letters which you could stick around the place, and microelastic, as we called it. You could join things up together, showing signal paths that we wanted. And then that was put around the operations area by a television camera behind our heads up on the right there. So it was a very crude form of telling people what configuration we wanted at any one time. We were paid under the Metal Trades Industry Award, I might add, so the wages weren't the best. We drank a lot of coffee during missions. Lots of people hated running simulations, but by golly, I think it made us one of the best tracking stations in the world because we could run our own simulations instead of relying on the Americans all the time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that.